Today on Maine Calling, actor and playwright John Cariani. In John Cariani's best-known play, Almost Maine, the setting is a very small, very northern town in Maine, a place that's described as the end of the world. Cariani returns to that familiar setting in his new play, Not Quite... which premieres at Portland Stage in April. He also brings back the same format of connecting a series of vignettes to tell stories of love and hope and other universal themes, all with his signature touch of humor. I'm Cindy Hahn. John Cariani's plays are hugely popular around the world, and he's an actor who has garnered Tony and Grammy nominations. He's also known for TV roles in shows like Law and Order. We'll talk with him about growing up in Presque Isle and how that has shaped him and his work over the years. And we'll hear about the new play and what it reflects about his outlook on life. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. John Cariani has made his mark as an actor, a playwright, and a novelist. His work in television, film, and stage includes roles on shows like Law and Order, Numbers, and Fiddler on the Roof. His plays have been produced internationally. The best known of these is Almost Maine, and now he has a new play premiering at Portland Stage in April. It's called Not Quite... We're so glad John Cariani could join us today to talk about his ties to Maine, his work, and whatever else is on his mind. Thanks for being here, John.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
We invite you to join the conversation. What's your favorite work of John Cariani's? Do you have questions for him about his childhood in Presque Isle or about the life of a performer? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And John, congratulations on the new play. I was going to call it Not Quite Almost, because I heard that was the working title, but then I understand that's shifted now, and you're calling it Not Quite... And so that whole thing intrigued me on how you even pick a title and what's going through your mind when you're figuring out what to settle on.
I'm not very good at coming up with titles, so titles are always kind of the last thing to fall in place. So this play is, well, Not Quite... It's changing. Changing again. So it looks like the new title is going to be Darker the Night, Brighter the Stars.
Wow. So you shifted gears.
Yeah.
That gives a little sense of it. Tell us a little more about the play and what it's about.
Well, it's another collection of short plays, like Almost Maine. It's a collection of short plays, this time for young people. The characters are in this play are age 16 to 24. All of the plays take place in my hometown, but Presque Isle, Maine. But Presque Isle is never named. It's just a town in northern Maine. And Almost Maine was a play that features adults and love stories featuring adults. And this is a collection of love stories featuring young people. And it's kind of autobiographical, kind of biographical. A lot of these plays I wrote maybe 30 years ago. And I kind of am resurrecting them at the behest of Dramatist Play Service. My publisher got some requests for some of these short plays for young people that are floating around in the world. And they kept asking me, what are these plays? And I was like, well, they're not very good. And they're plays for young people. And I don't know what to do with them. And they said, well, let us help you figure out what to do with them and make them good. So that's what I've been working on for the past couple of years with Portland Stage Company.
I understand that's sort of the way Almost Maine came together too, right? You had a bunch of these little vignettes that you wanted to put together somehow. So talk about, you know, first of all, that this is not a sequel to Almost Maine, but it's in the same spirit, it seems. But what is it about Almost Maine that made it work so well, that made it so hugely popular, produced all over the world?
I think it's because it's a collection of love stories, and theater does love stories and romantic comedy really well. Also, it's really easy to produce because you can do it with 4 actors, you can do it with 20 actors. It's pretty minimal in what it requires for sets. It also is, if you do it with a lot of actors, 20 actors, you can do it in a high school or a community theater or a college and have rehearsals with each couple on a different night. So you don't have to call a lot of people, and it doesn't require a lot of time on the part of the actors and the people involved. What was the question though, Cindy? I forgot what you just
Oh,
asked me.
just yeah, that you answered it really. What made it resonate with people, and I think you hit upon it. I think there's the humor too, that you're known for being funny, right?
Yeah, it's
And it's
funny.
in
Yeah,
there.
it's a funny play. And I
Yeah.
think this new one is, I think Almost Maine was kind of a love letter to Northern Maine, because when I left Northern Maine, I was taught to leave. I was taught I had to leave in order to become anything. And when I left, I was very homesick when I went to college, and I was homesick for a long time, and I really struggled with that because I wasn't supposed to be homesick. I was going to a good college. I was supposed to thrive. And I was homesick, and I realized how much I missed the place, and I realized how much I missed all these people who were so smart and could do things that I couldn't do, but I didn't realize just how smart and talented they were, because I wasn't taught that those people were smart and talented. I was taught that the people at the college I was going to were the smart and talented ones. And so I kind of wanted to just make a play about people who work hard for a living falling in love, because extraordinary things happen to normal, ordinary people. And I don't think extraordinary is owned by the wealthy or the powerful. And I think sometimes in our art, that's how we work, and I don't think it's quite right. But this new play is, it's a little more real. Like, if Almost Maine is a love letter to Northern Maine, this is kind of what it was like for me to grow up in Northern Maine. And it's not set in the past. It's set in, like, I say that it's set not too long ago, or maybe a long time ago. But it's just kind of interesting things that happen to kids. And I feel like there's not a lot of dramatic literature for young actors that's really good and deep the way kids are good and deep. Do you know what I mean? Like, kids do dumb things, they do bad things, they do good things, they do brilliant things. And there's not a lot exploring, the multidimensionality of being young. And these really do explore it. Like, we have stories about someone going into the army. That happened to my husband, went into the army after he graduated from college. That was really weird for me to see someone I wasn't quite sure I loved, because it was a long time ago, but I knew that I had feelings for him, and he went to Kuwait, and there's a story about someone who's a widow at 22. What is that like? When I remember one of my friend's kids got in an accident on a snowmobile, and that's life-changing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there are just other stories that are about what it's like to own a cleaning business and be thriving and doing amazingly well, while your friend who went to college is really flailing. Because that was kind of my experience. Some of my friends who stayed in Aroostook County thrived, and I was flailing in college a little bit. And it's
Yeah,
kind of
definitely.
a love-hate relationship between the rural and the urban and suburban. Because I feel like I have my feet firmly planted in both places, and it makes me feel, I guess, sometimes schizophrenic.
But it's the best of both worlds too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Almost Maine, that was 2004, right? That premiered, and for a while it was well received, but there was also controversy over some elements of the play, specifically a story that involved two men falling in love. And so there were some high schools that were, concerned about putting it on and all of that. Is there some element to that also in the new play?
Well, I think one of the reasons Almost Maine is popular is because it introduced the idea of gay people fall in love just like straight people, which was a novel idea 25 years ago. You know what I mean? I don't think people had quite arrived at that understanding. And, it was a bit controversial when it premiered at Portland Stage Company. I remember being at early performances, and people would leave after that scene.
Oh.
That doesn't happen anymore at all. It's not controversial at all anymore. But I think that's incredible progress, and I try to remind people that that's incredible progress. In this play, I mean, it's the same kind of gentle introduction to some ideas that people feel like they object to. Like, there are queer love stories in this play, but that's not what they're about. They're about people trying to figure things out, and they just happen to be gay or non-binary or something. It's not about pushing an agenda. It's about just like exploring what it is like to live fairly happily as a queer person in a rural place. Because so much of what we see in the media is about how awful it is to be a queer person who lives in a rural place. And that's not the whole story. I mean, it's a collection of love stories, straight, queer. But I'm trying to just like get my friends from New York City to understand that growing up in a rural place is really fun and awesome. And I think people just don't get that. And they don't understand that, yeah, you might not have a lot of money, or you might be struggling with being feeling left out of, the conventional society, but that doesn't mean you don't have fun and do fun things and do exciting things. That's what I'm trying to get people to think about, that even in the, when you're experiencing like a hard scrabble life, you still have a lot of fun. And I think we in the arts forget that. Also, just if I may say this right now, I want everybody to think about this. What kind of representation do you see in the cultural landscape, like of rural people? It's not a lot. And what we do see is about like who they vote for, how poor they are, how addicted they are. And it's just so much more than that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm really fascinated by my time in Portland working on Almost Maine, how no one from Southern Maine has really even been to Northern Maine. And they have so many opinions about Northern Maine. And I'm like, I had to say this. You've never been. You should go. I think you'd like it, you know?
Well, let's hear more about your childhood growing up in Presque Isle. What was it like? What were you like? I mean, what did you like to do?
Well, I went up there. I was a hockey player when I lived in Massachusetts, because hockey was such a big deal. And when we moved to Northern Maine, hockey wasn't really the sport in Northern Maine. It was basketball. So my hockey playing days kind of came to an end, but then I started playing the saxophone and the clarinet and the band. And we had a really, really good music program at Presque Isle High School. Like, we won a lot of state championships in the junior high jazz band and a lot of state championships in the high school jazz band. We were kind of awesome. And it was always kind of surprising to people that, like, a group of kids from Northern Maine could make good music. We also had really good theater programs. So I think my ending my hockey career and entering like the arts was a big thing for me. I had a great time. I mean, the town to me was all about keeping kids busy and not doing dumb things. I feel like that's what parents wanted the kids to do, because there were so many places for kids to disappear in Northern Maine. Like, literally, there you can just get, we all had got licenses pretty young, and we could all go places and disappear on our parents and do things we probably weren't supposed to do, like in Potato Field. And I think it was all about keeping us busy. That's my experience. And so it was all about church and school. And we had, we were busy at church and we were busy at school. And I do think that, that what's that phrase, idle hands or the devil's workshop or something like that. I think that was my childhood, was not being idle. And I mean, that's just something I just figured out. So
And were there glimmers of what you would be doing? Were you a performing type guy or were you
oh yeah.
writing?
Yeah, I was in the plays. We did a musical every fall and then a contest play every spring. And I was in the musicals, I think 3 of the years I was there, and 4 of the years, and I was in the contest play a couple of the years. I also know that when I graduated from high school, you know how we used to have senior pictures. This is to explain this to the young people out there. We used to have these, you'd give senior pictures to your friends that were like in a folder, and your awesome picture would be on one side, and then you'd have a space to write something like never change or stay the same, or you'd write a little note. And I guess to my really good friends, I wrote snippets of dialogue from conversations that I remembered us having. So there were these little mini plays. And one of my friends sent one of them to me recently saying, "You've been a playwright since we were in high school." And I was like, "Oh my gosh," it kind of made me cry a little.
Oh, that's so you should get them all to send them back so you can see what you wrote.
Right?
Right? You're like, I did that. That's
Yeah.
great. And were you funny too, since humor is, again, such an element in your work?
I don't ever think of myself as funny, because inside I feel kind of serious, but I guess I'm funny, but I don't feel like I think I'm funny. I don't know.
Well, so in terms of having that background, obviously that gives you the credibility that when you set your plays in small town northern Maine, you know what you're talking about. Do you feel like, now you live in New York, but do you feel like that Maine sensibility is not only in your work, but even as you just go around in life that you're carrying this Mainer identity with you?
Well, it's funny because as an actor, I'll never play a Mainer from Northern Maine because I don't quote unquote look like one. And this is something we're learning to maybe expand the way we think about this stuff. Place is associated with what people look like. I look like two people in New York City or casting directors like as someone from Brooklyn because I have dark hair. I'm Italian. So I'm limited by my, I call it my casing. Like as an actor, you're limited by what you look like, your casing. So I never would get to play when I was younger. I never got to play like, you know, a kid from a small town where they grew, you know, wheat or something. Like I wouldn't get to audition for that, even though I would understand that. So I kind of learned to become more urban. I learned to talk faster. I read a lot. I learned how to read the right things. I read the New York Times. I learned how to be an urban person so I could get jobs. But I wasn't expressing my guess, I guess my true self, and that was like a Mainer. And I started to just realize how much I missed stories about people that I grew up with the performing arts. And I just wanted to, you know, in the middle of the 20th century, there was a big moment of like really honoring rural Americans, like Oklahoma, like Most Happy Fella. There were big musicals about farmers, and there were plays about by people from rural places. Like William Inge wrote plays about like Kansas, and these were like revered plays that won Pulitzer Prizes. And I feel like we honored rural America in our films. Like we honored people who worked the land, who worked hard for a living in places that were far away from cities. And that has changed so much now. And I guess I'm just trying to figure out why we ignore like the rural experience when there are 75 million rural dwellers in this country. Do you know what I mean? Like I see there's money to be made, you know, and I've heard from a lot of kids that it's nice to see a play about, with Almost Maine in particular, it's nice to see a play about things that their parents do, you know, and that means a lot to me.
But then you have to walk a careful line when you're portraying Maine and the people who live here, because you want to capture what makes Mainers distinct, and but then you don't want to reinforce stereotypes, right? So is that hard to do? Are there certain Maine stereotypes that are actually pretty accurate that you want to stick in there, and other ones that you don't want people, perpetuating?
Well, I have to be careful because I'm not a Northern Mainer anymore. So I'm approaching it as an outsider. So I have to kind of try to vet my stuff with my friends who are Mainers. I try to do that with them and just say, does this feel right? And they'll be pretty honest. But I do think there's a kind of like New England stoicism. My parents are a big influence on my writing because they just, like my dad was the king of accepting new information and moving forward with it instead of having a million opinions about it. And it's a really refreshing way to live your life. And so I've always held that pretty close. And I feel that the people I really love do that. Yeah, I feel funny right now because I've lived, you know, I'm not a Mainer anymore. So I feel like a poser sometimes. But I feel like it's still home. I still call it home. I still feel most at home when I'm in Maine. You know, I don't know what that is, but it's a real thing.
Well, we'll talk more about that after the break. We will be right back after this. My guest is playwright and actor John Cariani, and our number is 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. I'm talking with John Cariani. You may know him for his TV roles in shows like Law and Order and Numbers, or from Broadway, or from movies, or because of his plays like Love Sick and Last Gas and Cul-de-sac. His best-known play, Almost Maine, is one of the most frequently produced plays in the U.S. and is also a novel. John Cariani's newest play is going to premiere in Portland this spring, and also, John is from Presque Isle, which explains why Maine figured so prominently in his work. Join the conversation. What questions do you have for John Cariani about his Maine roots or about his acting or writing? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can also give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And calling in now is Anita Stewart, Artistic Director at Portland Stage. Thanks for joining us, Anita.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Cindy.
Hi, Anita. I'm
John
so
said
happy you're here.
he's smiling a big smile, knowing that you're on the line. So, we talked a little bit about his new play. Tell us from your end what the plans are for showcasing his latest play. And I know, and we just talked about, you're still on your website. It's called Not Quite Almost, right?
Yeah, but the name is changing, and that's great. And what's amazing to me about John as a playwright is that he is really looking for how to make his work the best it can be. So when he was talking about his friends and learning from his friends about how to write language and how to write about Northern Maine, last summer, he also organized a workshop of this play up in Presque Isle that we did with high school students. And so he was learning from them and inviting them to join in the conversation about how to make this play. So it's really exciting to me when there's a writer who is really invested in a script and wants to make it the best that they can and is willing to be collaborative about it. It makes it a lot of fun for all of us.
Well, John told us a little bit about it, and it's a focus on younger people. So tell us how that's going to be for you with staging it.
It's exciting to be doing a work that is for more late teens, early 20s-year-olds. I think that's there. As John mentioned, there's not a lot of work that's out there that's for that demographic. We've all been through it, so we can all remember those feelings that we had. But it's also great to do something that really is about young folks in a way that I think we don't have a lot in the theater world that really deals with that and deals with rural students and rural young people. And just what is it to have a first job or to leave a place, and where am I headed? So I know my children both really appreciate the script a lot because they see pieces of themselves in it. And so it's really fantastic to have the opportunity to bring this new piece to life.
That's good. You have your own little test audience there. And I know that the new play is also, it carries on the same spirit as Almost Maine, which premiered at Portland Stage all the way back in 2004, and then it played again in 2020. Can you describe what that play has meant to Portland Stage and to audiences?
Well, that play, I think for Portland Stage really was us cementing a position that we've been working on new play development for a long time, since way back at the beginnings of Portland Stage. And Almost Maine was really, it cemented a play that moved on and has an international life. And so I think it proved our mettle with an ability to do that. And it also was a way for us to bring Maine to the rest of the United States and the rest of the world. And so I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud of the work that we've continued to do to develop both plays by people like John, but we've also, Monica Wood has now become a playwright, which is fantastic. Bess Weldon, we're doing Madeline's right at this moment. She's another Maine writer. And we run the Clowder Competition, which is a competition for New England writers. And we're right now in the final stages of the most current iteration of that. So we're going to be announcing a play in our next season that is a new play from the New England region. And we've learned how to help writers and how to do it in a way that keeps them honest, keeps them focused on the work. But the group that we've developed can really help ask the questions that I think are helpful to a writer as they're in that new play development process. And John can speak to that a little bit.
Sure. John, you want to chime in? And also, I know you wanted to say something else about the new play.
Well, Anita and Portland Stage Company were doing something that no one else was doing 20 years ago, which was supporting local playwrights. For such a long time, the regional theater movement would take plays that were popular in New York City, whether they be Broadway or off-Broadway, and then just taking them and presenting them to their audiences. And over time, I think that started to not work because there were so many New York-centric plays that people say in, I don't know, Minneapolis might not quite understand that you know, they might not quite understand the subway jokes, for example. Do you know what I mean? And so I don't know when this started happening, Anita, but you started, I remember Women of the Sea, you started producing and promoting work by Mainers. And there was this new idea that maybe the regional theater scene should start promoting plays by people who live in the city or town that they're making theater for, the audiences they're making theater for, so they can see themselves. I know that like Indiana Rep has a resident playwright who's an someone from Indiana. Do you know what I mean? And that's starting to take shape all over the country. And I think Anita and Portland Stage Company did it kind of first, and they've had great success with doing plays by Maine playwrights about Mainers, and proving to people, like so many people said to me, I don't understand why your play is popular because it's so much about Northern Maine. And I'm like, they say the specific becomes universal, you know? So I think it's incredible what Portland Stage has done, and I've reaped the benefits of it for sure. And you know, Anita, oh, sorry, go ahead, Cindy.
Oh, go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, Anita said something about, like, you know, I was thinking, Anita, when we were up there with the kids, one of the things I learned and one of the things I added to the play a little bit when we were working on the play in Presque Isle, I was struck by the presence of God in the lives of people from Northern Maine. God and religion are present. And God and religion are present in a lot of our lives. And God and religion isn't really as present in a lot of art that we see. It's so funny that art used to be all religion. Do you know what I mean? And now it feels like it's all secular. And so it's been interesting for me to kind of inject people of faith who are good. Because I find that being from Northern Maine, when I was growing up, someone got pushed off a bridge for being gay. I remember that happened. And that kind of defined Maine as far as how it handled gay people. So that made a lot of us just closet up immediately. And then I remember not too long ago, I heard someone was living in their car because their parents wouldn't accept them for who they were. And so that becomes the story. And actually, the story is most kids who go through like some sort of difficult experience or a coming out experience, an addiction experience, their families tend to, by and large, stand by them and do the very best they can to help them. And I'm interested in that drama of like, what is it like when a family tries to deal with its conservative values and their child comes out? Like, how do you handle that? And I think most people actually handle it really well, and there's great drama in that. And I think novels explore it really well, but I don't think movies, television, and theater explores it very well. And I think it's really interesting.
Well, Anita, before we let you go, at the risk of embarrassing John, what do you think it is about him and his plays that's special, that stands out?
John is just so amazing at getting at the truth. He, as he mentioned, it's digging into little things that feel so real because they are real. It's coming from a truth, and that little tiny kernel sort of expands out and is a universal truth in its minuteness. But that's just lovely and sweet and charming, and his use of language is just phenomenal to do that. So it's such a joy to be bringing a new play by John to the stage.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for joining us, Anita. That was Anita Stewart. She is the artistic director of Portland Stage, where John Cariani's new play, which is going to be called Darker the Night, Brighter the Stars, is that right?
I think so. It could change again, but right now I like the title.
Working title, working title. That's going to be premiering in April, starting April 2nd through May 4th. So thank you, Anita. And John, we've got some enthusiastic folks writing in right now, so I'll read a couple here. Email from Jefferson. I'm from Presque Isle, and we are proud of our native son, John Cariani. Last Gas is my favorite play of John's. I am thankful that John is kind and generous with his art. He is well known to encourage aspiring artists, including young people. Yay, John! So there's a cheerleader for you. And there's another note here saying, this is a message from Bill. Thank you for your story of your upbringing and your journey. And by the way, you will always be a Mainer, not a poser.
Thank you.
Yes, that's great. So I wanted to turn a little bit now to what you're doing now. And are you still doing a lot of acting, or do you prefer the writing to the acting, or vice versa? What are you spending your time doing?
Well, since the pandemic, there's been development of new work kind of ground to a halt, and in New York City. And since the pandemic, I would say since 2022, when it really felt like we were on our way out of the pandemic, there has just been all of us actors have been inundated with requests to do workshops of new musicals and new plays. So my past few years have been filled with that. One of the plays I'm working on, it's a I guess it's a play with music, is about gay men in the 1920s who were put in prison in New York City for being gay. And they had tests run on them. And it sounds really horrible and tragic, and it's not great, I'm not gonna lie, but it's a really funny. So these men were put in prison, and they were put into their own wing of the prison called the Fag Ward. And what they did is every Christmas time, they put on a pageant. It was called the Fag Follies. And it was the most popular thing at the prison. So these men would put on this wonderful show for all the inmates. And it's interesting how they got along because of art. You know what I mean? It's like, it's an old story, but they got along because these guys made art for these prison other prisoners to consume, I guess is the word we use now. And it's just, it's really interesting because it's neat. I'm one of the older people in the play. And it's funny because the younger people think it's just so evil that the eugenics movement occurred. And we're learning that these doctors thought they were helping. And that's the tragedy of so much of being human, I guess. We think we're helping when we're actually doing so much harm. And so that's the line that this play walks. It's about the tragedy of what happens to these men, how they're treated. Some are lobotomized. My character was just left in prison because he would never admit his homosexuality. So he remained in prison and had a wife and five kids. We now know that that man might have been bisexual. You know what I mean? And he might have been a philanderer, but was definitely dedicated to his wife and kids. We know that now. That's a possibility. Back then, that wasn't a possibility. So that's been really interesting. And I'm also working on a new musical that goes up in the Berkshires this summer at Barrington Stage Company. It's called Fuzzy, and it's a musical about a mother and son. The woman playing my mother is Cass Morgan, who's kind of a Broadway legend. And the son, me, goes home to Nebraska to help his mom deal with eye cancer. And it sounds really awful and sad, but it's so sweet and funny. And believe it or not, there are puppets involved. And I can't tell you that it somehow makes sense and is wonderful, but when I describe it, it sounds so weird.
Wait, what kind of puppets? Like those huge kinds, or just on people's hands?
People on people's hands. So there's a
Oh.
puppeteer who plays Fuzzy, which is me, and then I think
Wow.
Muzzy, which is the mom. And it's about melding when you're a puppet and when you're human. It's about becoming human, I think. So it's a very interesting play.
Super interesting. Wait, so I didn't catch which are you acting in and which did you write?
I'm acting in both of these.
Okay, all right. And the first one you said it's a play with music. Does that mean it's a musical or is it
I guess it's a
different?
musical, but it's funny. I guess it's becoming more of a musical, but it feels to us like a play.
That's really fun. So for you, when you're coming up with a play or an idea, how much research do you do? How does something pop to the surface, and how much do you have to sort of really dig in to learn about the facts and, to get things right?
I just tell people it takes as much as it takes. There's a certain point when you know you're ready. You know you're ready to write. Like I want to write a play about a woman who runs a pawn shop in 1980, when women were getting credit and the sketchiness of pawnbrokers. And I'm doing a lot of research about pawn shops and women, how women got credit in the 70s and 80s, how that was a new thing. So I've been doing my research on that, reading books. I haven't really started writing that play yet. I've written one scene and I've just been reading about pawn shops and what it was like to be a woman in the 70s when things were starting to open up to women.
So how did that bubble up to the surface as the thing you're going to focus on out of all the possible topics?
There, I want to make a, I want to, I think I want to create a farce, like a door slamming play. And this, I think this space will, the pawn shop will give me the opportunity to do that. And I also wanted to, I think I read somewhere about some artifact, a Catholic, what do you call it? Like a statue, I guess, was being used to smuggle stuff. And so I think in this pawn shop, there are some shenanigans going on with, and there are nuns involved, which I think is hilarious.
That
And also,
sounds.
I love that nuns are like, if you're a nun and you take a saint's name, you'll be like Sister Mary Lawrence O'Donnell. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of those nuns go by their male name, which I just find fascinating. So
That does sound fascinating. You just need to throw in some puppets and then you're done, right? Well, thank you. We're going to take another quick break. Our guest today is John Cariani, and our phone number is 800-399-3566. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Joining me today is John Cariani. He is an acclaimed actor who was nominated for a Tony Award as well as a couple of Grammy Awards. And he's a playwright whose play, Almost Maine, is one of the most produced plays in the nation and has been translated into more than a dozen languages. His next play, which was called Not Quite Almost, then Not Quite, and probably going to be Darker the Night, Brighter the Stars. It is premiering in Maine this spring. Share your questions or comments. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. We have a message from Tom on Facebook. He says, loved John's reporter character on the Onion News Network and also the medical examiner on Law and Order. And also from Tom, a question. I haven't been able to see Almost Maine. Is there a filmed version?
No. That's the answer.
No. People wish there was, probably so. But there is the novel.
Yeah, right? And hopefully there will be a way for people to see another version of Almost Maine, but it's the whole process is in such a nascent stage that I can't say anything, but hopefully, Tom, you'll see something along the lines of what you were asking about.
Okay. But as far as the novel goes, how much is that exactly what the play is or just expanding on it?
Well, I mean, I've gotten to know Monica Wood pretty well because she has become an extraordinary playwright. And it's just so neat to see someone move from the novel world to the play world. And it was so funny because she kept saying, you know, John, in a lot of ways, writing a play is so much easier because you don't have to put in, like, the actors fill in all this, like the costume designer fills in description, the set designer fills in all that, all the set design description, and the actors fill in the psychological experience. So I just have to, like, get the bones of the story out and the words. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much it. And when I went from playwriting to writing a novel, I was not outstanding at it. It took me a very long time to figure out how to get in there and help people who were just reading understand what's going on. Wait, what's the question though? Oh, how's it just different?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're again, go ahead.
I guess I got to get in there and think about, I know that in the novel version of Almost Maine, Jeanette, who is the very first person who speaks in the play, mm-hmm. and who's really a minor character in the play, becomes the main character. And that was kind of interesting to realize that she was the person who we follow through the novel. And also just getting to describe Northern Maine was really fun. Figuring out how to describe Northern Maine, figuring out how to describe the cold, figuring out how to describe the quiet, figuring out how to describe the wind, you know, all of that was just so interesting. And what it looks like and what it feels like, it was really fun for me. I mean, I did my best. I met the deadline, but I wish it was better.
You did a great job. You incorporated these little details about the food or, you know, the feel or the sound of things that I think is really neat to have in the book. But let's see. We have other questions coming in. Let's see if I can get Joe, right? Joe calling from Hiram. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi. Really, this story of your profession and life resonate with me. I have a son who graduated from University of Maine at Presque Isle, and he really found himself there and has stayed very close to classmates in his athletic trainer degree program for years now. And I mean, they have coffee over the text every morning. And Northern Maine really does have an amazing ambiance. But of interest to me in a selfish way is that my son is in New Orleans. He's a stay-at-home dad with kids, but he's also does improv comedy and acting to some degree professionally, but for therapeutic reasons also. And I think if you're play or one of your plays ever comes out in New Orleans, I would love to know about that so he can try out because like anybody who goes to college in Maine, I think he has various versions of a Maine accent and has a lot of stories that resonate as yours do. And I thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. I never know when it's going to be done or where it's going to be done. So tell him to look out for it and see if they're auditioning.
I did before I called.
Are there any tips for auditioning, John, as far as portraying Mainers? Is there any tips that you would have?
I have to say most people expect a Maine accent, and in Northern Maine, there really isn't a Maine accent. And so I just try to tell people, think more Canadian than Maine. You know what I mean? Because that doesn't really exist up there.
Sure, sure.
I just tell people to say, just say you're sorry and say you're going somewhere tomorrow and you'll sound like a Mainer. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Sorry instead of sorry. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. And my brother and I still slip and we say we're sorry. And people are like, where are you from? And I'm like, Maine. You know?
Oh, thank you for your call, Joe. Nice to hear from you.
Thanks,
and
Joe.
We also have, let's see, we have a question here from Peter, email. He's saying, I'm curious which classic plays and or musicals you find yourself returning to, either for inspiration or just for enjoyment.
Picnic by William Inge. All My Sons by Arthur Miller. The Little Foxes by Lillian Hellman. Skeleton Crew by Dominique Morisseau. Those are the four that come to mind right now. I actually don't love musicals because they don't make sense to me, even though I've done a lot of them. I love plays. And it's not that I don't like musicals. I just find that plays speak to me a little bit more. I love music and I love plays, and I'm not sure that I love musicals in the same way that I love plays. I love more plays. I love a few musicals, and I love a lot of plays. That's what I've learned about myself. And I don't think that means anything other than I just prefer to hear people talk than sing and talk, I guess. I don't know why. But those are, and also just short stories have been a big influence on me. Short films have been a big influence on me. Songs are a big influence on me. The way they can take you on a journey so quickly. I've kind of learned that the long form, novels, films, tend to have a lot of ego in them. And I'm learning that short form is focused on form more. And that's just something I'm discovering lately, is that short plays, songs, short films, they're all about getting the story told as efficiently as possible. And I feel like long form, sometimes that is just not the case. And we talk a lot about attention spans these days, and I'm not sure that attention spans have decreased. I think that the way we can tell stories so quickly, so effectively has changed. I think that's it, actually. We can tell a story really fast now in a way that we just couldn't, because so many more people can tell stories now and they're using their phones. And so I feel like that might be the change in attention span. I'm not sure it's that we can't sit through things. I think it's we can't sit through things that feel like they're meandering, maybe. I don't know. I'm figuring this out right now, so I don't know if I'm not making any sense. But
yeah,
it
makes sense to me.
I've been really influenced by short stories like Olive Kittredge. Like, that was a big influence on me. I can't remember who wrote that. I feel so bad. Who wrote that?
Elizabeth Strout. Yeah.
Yes. That was a huge influence on me because, and also Monica Wood's memoir was a big influence on me because she was writing about things I thought you weren't allowed to write about. I thought I'm not allowed to write about these people. I'm not allowed to write these things because these aren't important people, and learning that they are. Literature's done a great job of like recognizing the importance of all humanity. You know what I mean? I feel like I would love for the theater to like dig in and get some stories about the people who we kind of dismiss or think aren't as important. But I loved Olive Kittredge and When We Were the Kennedys because they dug into Maine and they weren't showy. They were simple, clean, clear storytelling. And I just loved them for that, you know?
Sure. We have an email from Libby, and she's asking, I've always been curious about the appeal of acting on stage versus acting on TVs or movies. How similar or different are they, and the approaches an actor has to bring to one or the other?
Acting, you just have to use your whole body as being seen by the audience, so your whole body has to do the thinking. That's what I like to tell people. And in a film, you have to know what's being shot, so if they're just shooting your face, that's all that's doing the thinking. If it's just your eyes, it's just your eyes that are doing the thinking. So you're at the mercy of the camera when you're doing film and television. And when you're doing a play, in plays, actors are in control of the storytelling. In film and television, editors are in control of the storytelling. So they take the raw footage that a director collects and that the actors give, and then the editors put it together. I think I'm not an expert, but that's kind of my take on it.
That's a good answer. And so are you surprised sometimes when you see the edited version and go, whoa, that's not what I thought it was going to be?
Yeah, you wonder why they picked it all the time.
Okay. And here's an email from Sue. Thanks, John, for sharing Northern Maine with the rest of the world. We raised our children now in their 30s in Presque Isle. As they left home and were looking for work, they discovered that employers appreciated the work ethic of kids from the county. Is this something you've encountered as well? And did you ever pick potatoes?
I sure did. I picked potatoes for 3 years, three falls. I loved it and absolutely hated it. I was one of those kids who would often pick the end section so I could get more barrels as the day went along. Because if you're on an end section, it's not even on the end. So sometimes it would get longer or shorter. Some kids would pick a section that would start out long and get shorter so that by the end of the day, you had an easy row to pick up. I would usually pick the one that got longer, and I would always get so far behind that at the end of the day, I'd be the last person picking and everybody would be mad at me. So that was kind of my experience. but I picked potatoes. I never worked on a harvester. I kind of wanted to, but I never did. Wait, what was the other part of the question though? I picked potatoes.
Oh,
and what
just
else?
About the work ethic of kids from the county. Is that something that you think is a thing? Is different?
I do, but I'm biased. You know, I mean, I just like people who like to help and do and work. You know, and I'm trying to tell a lot of my young friends who are writers, like, you have to do every day, or you'll feel like you're not doing anything. Like, you have to figure out I think thinking for a living is dangerous. And I think you have to figure out how to think and do. So that's my battle too.
Well, in order to do what you do, to be an actor, to be a playwright, you have to really observe people and how they act and why they do what they do. Do you kind of feel a little bit like a sociologist who's documenting people's lives and the way they think and act? Is that something that is why you like what you do?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a watcher. That's a little creepy, but yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, I teach a playwriting class, and there's this one exchange that I saw that is a good example of, like, how a playwright lives their life. I was down near Madison Square Garden. This is a while ago, and there was a U2 concert going on. So I found myself, like, when you're a New Yorker and you find yourself at Madison Square Garden at, like, 6:45 or 7 o'clock at night when there's a concert, you're like, why did I come this way? I'm never going to get through these people. You know, so I'm walking through, and I'm like, oh, I'm stuck. I'm walking through all these people, and I hear this woman yelling. She sees her husband, or I'm guessing it's her husband or her boyfriend, across the street. He's like, honey, come on. He's like, yeah, did you get my text? She's like, yeah, come on. He's like, honey, did you get my text? She's like, yeah, come on. We're going to be late. He's like, the concert was starting. They wanted to get in there. And she's like, honey, come on. And he's like, honey, I lost my job. Did you get my text? She's like, yeah, great. Come on, let's go.
I
wanted to follow them to hear the rest of that
conversation. Oh, my gosh.
I wrote that conversation down. And that's what I do all the time. I heard this great conversation, two kids on a subway recently. So these two kids are on their phones sitting there, very, like, disinterested in everything. And the kid leans over and he goes, hey, I love you. And the girl goes, mm-hmm. And that was it. And I wanted to stay and see what they were going to say next, but I had to get off the train. Isn't that amazing?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to break my rule about not asking a big question at the end of the show because we have like a minute left, but I can't help it that the nation right now is a very tense and chaotic place with politics and current events. How are you, some people immerse themselves in it and read everything. Other people just focus on their lives and their work. And how are you approaching this moment in time?
Well, I like that I have to work hard to make a living. So that helps a lot. You know, when you have to work hard to make a living, you have to work. So I think that makes it a little easy. I don't have all the time in the world to read the news, you know, and I was never a huge news reader. I knew how to read enough news to know what's going on. And then not so much that I got paralyzed. And I think during the pandemic, I learned to watch and read the news all the time, and it wasn't great for me. And so I've just kind of learned to listen to a little NPR, read a little other sources just to get other sides. I'm trying to get other sides of, you know, I'm trying to learn more about the business aspect of my field because I know nothing about it, and learning how much that affects how my business is going to continue. And so I guess just, yeah, I'm lucky that I'm busy right now, so I'm not reading a lot of news. But when I'm not as busy, I tend to read more news and get a little bit, you know, worked up about stuff I can't control. And just trying to remember to do instead of think too much. That helps me a lot. Do more, think less.
That's good advice. And we have a final email from Chris, and he says, John is one of the fabulous humans to collaborate with. He's generous. I'm so proud to know him and that he's from Maine. And that is Chris Henry, artistic director at Royal Family Productions. So
she is fabulous herself. She's another Mainer who's doing great things in New York City and in Maine.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, John. John Cariani is an actor, a writer, a playwright, a novelist, and a native of Presque Isle. Today's sound engineer is Sandra Harris, and you can visit the Maine Calling website to find our past shows or to sign up for our weekly newsletter. I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.